It just broke last night that Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are going to head Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency. And we have a lot to talk about what the implications are. Hans is my wonderful co-host. And Richard is a lawyer. So he's going to walk us through how realistic this is going to be from an execution perspective and what the potential roadblocks will be as Elon and Vivek walk through this craziness. So we'll start with the letter from the Trump team. Statement from President Donald Trump. I am pleased to announce that the great Elon Musk, anyway, working in conjunction with American patriot Vivek, will lead the Department of Government Efficiency. Together, these two wonderful Americans will pave the way for my administration to dismantle government bureaucracy, slash excess regulations, cut wasteful expenditure, and restructure federal agencies. Essential to the Save America movement. This will send shockwaves through the system, and anyone involved in government waste, which is a lot of people, stated Mr. Musk. It will become potentially the Manhattan Project of our time. Republican politicians have dreamed about the objectives, so on and so forth, and other stuff in here. Let's see if we can... To drive this kind of drastic change, the Department of Government Efficiency will provide advice and guidance from outside of government, which is, I think, a very important line here, and will partner with the White House and Office of Management and Budget to drive large-scale structural reform and create an entrepreneurial approach to government never seen before. I look forward to Elon and Vivek making changes to the federal bureaucracy with an eye on efficiency and at the same time making life better for all Americans. Importantly, we will drive out the massive waste and fraud which exists throughout our annual $6.5 trillion budget of government spending. They will work together to liberate our economy and make the U.S. government accountable to we the people. Their work will conclude no later than July 4th, 2026, which is America's 250th birthday. A smaller government with more efficiency and less bureaucracy will be the perfect gift to the America on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Now, there were some follow-ups on this, which I want to make sure we cover because these are very, very important points, which kind of like highlights where this could go. So Elon Musk posted this last night. All actions of the Department of Government Efficiency will be posted online for maximum transparency. Anytime the public thinks we're cutting something important or not cutting something wasteful, just let us know. We will also have a leaderboard for most insanely dumb spending of your tax dollars. This will be both extremely tragic and extremely entertaining. As a data guy, nothing makes me happier. And then lastly, this post from Vivek, which I think this is like getting to the nitty gritty of this. And this is why having Richard is going to be so incredibly valuable for this podcast. This was this morning, about an hour or so before we started this podcast. Here's a key point about our mission at Doge. Eliminating bureaucratic regulations isn't a mere policy preference. It's a legal mandate from the U.S. Supreme Court. And he starts listing these cases. So West Virginia versus EPA in 2022 held that agencies cannot decide major questions of economic or political significance without clear congressional authorization. This applies to thousands of rules that never pass Congress. In Loper Bright versus Raimondo in 2024, the court ended Chevron which English is my second language, can you tell? Which
by the way, means I'm gonna argue, by the way, just so you know, I'm going to argue the opposite of what he's
okay. Talking. Yeah. Fantastic. I love it. Yeah. Which means agencies can't foist their own interpretations of the law onto the American people. Over 18,000 federal cases cited the Chevron doctrine, often to uphold regulations, many of which are now null and void. In SEC versus Jarkissi, 2024. Mm-hmm. Good thing we have a lawyer here. SCOTUS restricted the use of administrative law judges by agencies. The same agency that wrote the rules shouldn't be able to prosecute citizens in courts that it controls. And lastly,
while we're going through it, actually, what it said was, if there was a financial claim against an individual, they had a Seventh Amendment right to a jury trial. That's what the holding is. So what he just said is not the holding. So let's start off before we go any further. Because somebody says something doesn't make it true, and just because he's brilliant, and I think he is brilliant, I think he's making a position, not stating the law. So go continue.
Love it. In Corner Post versus Board of Governors 2024, the court held that new businesses can challenge all regulations, greatly expanding the statute of limitations and opening many more rules up for scrutiny. So we shouldn't just look at rules passed in the last 4 years, but over the past four decades or more. Doge is ready to help the U.S. government conform to the U.S. Constitution once again. Elon Musk and I are ready to serve. Okay, so that I think this is like, this is probably the most, this is like a very good indication of, I think, how they're thinking about executing against this. And so now we have in someone who actually knows what they're talking about.
I would not go that far.
That's well, you got paid to be a lawyer, so you know way more than we do.
I'm not getting paid for this.
That's fair. Okay. So we're getting bad advice. Great. No. Yeah. So we have Richard from Not Legal Advice on YouTube, at Rara on Twitter, X. That is just so great at breaking this down for us. So I'm going to give you the mic, Richard, and then Hans, feel free to jump in at any point. School us. Help us understand how this is being executed, how realistic this is. Go for it. Mic is yours.
First of all, the first question I have is, don't you think the term fire retardant is politically incorrect?
sounds politically incorrect.
Anyway, so I got interested in this. We talked about this probably like 18 months ago, MMTLP. Yeah. Why is that significant? Because, you know, the cases that you cited relate to the agency's authority. And because MMTLP dealt with the FINRA and those agencies, that ended up being important. So one of the cases I happened to follow very closely was Jarkissi. I just happened to follow that because that involved FINRA and it involved the issue about regulatory authority. So kind of how I would look at it, first of all, we have to decide, what are they doing here? They're claiming it's a non-governmental agency. Do I think that it is? No, I don't. Do I think it's advisory? No. I think they have significantly more power than just an advisory agency. So theoretically, if it was just an advisory, a group of advisors, and they would provide input occasionally, and maybe somebody would act upon it or not, is there anything to discuss? I don't think there's anything to discuss at that point in time. I think that's commonplace and that's acceptable. But I don't think that's how it's described. I think how it's described is it's a agency without being an agency. We don't want to be held to the same rules as an agency. We want to be able to act outside of the agency. So what's the issue there? The issue there is, can the president do that? Can the president set up a regulatory body? No, the president cannot. That's up for the Senate, the Congress to set up regulatory bodies and to define the scope of their of whatever they're going to do specifically. Why wouldn't they do that? What's their concern about not? Because at this point in time, Republicans are going to have House, Senate, and presidency. So you would think if they wanted to set up a new regulatory body for a limited period of time, which they could do. So they could say it's going to start January 6th, 2025, run to July 24th, 2026, and it expires. It's done. They could do that. And in that process, they would decide what the agency could do or not can do. What I think, and this is just pure speculation on my part, what I think they're concerned about is that there might be a filibuster or some interference by the Democrats, which would delay the start. And the Trump's promise, I think, was from the beginning to kind of start dealing with this issue. So the way I see it, and I'll get to kind of the specific legal issues, but I'm sure they can do this. They could, day one, start going. They could set up Elon and Ramak in a conference room at your house and
who, get going. Ramak? Who's Ramak?
that's his brother.
Okay.
That's not the point. The point is, what happens afterwards? So could they go and start cutting people? Yeah, I think they absolutely could. And I think they will, by the way. So I'm not saying they won't do this. I think absolutely day one, they will start, they'll post their results, and they'll go to, Department of Education, and they'll say there's 27,000 jobs that need to be cut. And they'll do that
department by department. And I'm sure they've already started, by the way. So I don't think like day one, they're going to start looking at the list. I think day one is when they're going to start executing on their list. I think that's the way it goes. So the issue that happens after day one is what? So I'm the employee who's at the Department of Education and I get fired and I get a call from a lawyer. The lawyer's a plaintiff's lawyer and says, you know, there's a question here. This is a novel situation. You lost your job. Did these guys have the right to do what they do? And you would file a lawsuit and you'd get to the end of the lawsuit. Maybe that's a year. Because you got to remember the time frame here, too. We're within a four-year box. The four-year box is being Trump's term here is 4 years. So let's say you're fired day one and you get to hire a lawyer 30 days later. Somebody's going to do it, by the way. It'll be somebody and probably more than one somebody. It'll probably be some kind of class action. And you go through the period of that case. Let's say it takes 2 years to get to the end of the case, because if it's a big case, it'll take 2 years. And let's say you lose, because at the trial level, I think it's very likely that you're going to lose. Then you go on appeal, and on appeal, let's say the appellate court says you lose again. That's another year, at least another year. So now you're in year four. You file with the Supreme Court. Now we get to what the arguments are. So what he was making as an argument was that these cases limit the authority of the regulatory body.
Oh. Uh-oh. Richard, we lost you, brother. Damn it. He was about to get into the good stuff, too. we'll hold on for Richard. Maybe his phone disconnected or something. But for my takeaway here from what he said so far, and once he comes back, we'll bring him in, is that there is a way for the Trump administration to actually execute this in some way, shape, or form. At the very least, they can put together all the departments, all the people, all the things, all the regulations that should be removed, or they should be axed, or they should be downsized, et cetera, et cetera. They can bring the data to the public that, you know, through the scorecards and everything to try and buy in from the public to say, hey, yes, this is, we don't want this anymore. Like basically opening the door and creating transparency around the things they think are broken, right? And then after doing that, good thing we got him back. And after doing that, they should be able to execute against us. So real quick, while you were gone, and you were about to get into some juicy stuff, but I just want to get you caught up on what I was saying. It sounds like they are going to be able to at least identify and make a plea to the public. These are the things that should be removed, and these are the things we want to remove. And they could even remove it, but they might get to a point where in 4 years' time, depending on the ruling of SCOTUS, we might be back to square one. That's what it sounds like.
So let's go back. Slam dunk. They could go in front of, they could have Congress set up an agency, a regulatory body. They could go forward and do whatever they wanted to do, and they would be pretty much protected. They might still be subject to lawsuit, but the lawsuit couldn't claim that their actions were improper outside of Constitution. If they set up, if they go through the literally set up an agency, define what the agency can do, vote the agency in, the president then would appoint who runs the agency, which is the job of the president, not to set up the agency. That's perfectly acceptable. That's within the constitutional realm. What they're trying to do is to go outside of that. That's the issue. That's the issue that will come up. It's not that what they're going to do is problematic. It's the way they're doing it that's problematic. And that's why I was giving you the timeline, because basically they're going to run out the clock. It'll be in front of the U.S. Supreme Court at the end of the term. Okay, everybody's gone. The president's out. He's not. It doesn't involve him anymore. It's up to the courts. And the courts, here's the point. The Supreme Court is taking the position that the regulatory bodies should have less authority, not more. So here you are. This is even beyond that. This is not even the regulatory bodies exercising
power. This is in a false and kind of, I think it's a disguised fake manner, acting as a regulatory body without being a regulatory body. I cannot see possibly how the Supreme Court, who is limiting the power of the regulatory bodies, would take kindly upon that. And in fact, that Jarkissi case, it wasn't the situation where the regulatory body lost power and it was vacant and in a vacuum. It went to the courts. That was literally what happened. So the case was, can the regulatory body in that case make the decision about penalizing a member of FINRA? That was the question. And the Supreme Court said, no, that's got to go to a court, an Article III court. So it's not the case. So the thinking to me doesn't make any sense. This is not a case where the power is going from the regulatory body to some third party. This is where the power is going from the regulatory body to the courts. And the way they've done it is to completely evade that. So I guarantee you there will be a huge amount of litigation that could be avoided if they were patient. Right. If they exercise, again, do I expect that there'll be pushback from the Democrats in Senate? Yeah, absolutely they will. That's their only source of power, the filibuster. And that's why you've heard talk about, I think one of the first things the president was talking about was also getting rid of the filibuster. Because if he gets rid of the filibuster, then any action in the Senate is not subject to being attacked in any way, because they'll have the majority in the Senate. So I think it's just a matter of impatience, and because I think you can accomplish it, and you'd have a much better chance of of whatever you decided to prevail than doing it temporarily, because I think it's a temporary fix. I think it's going to be challenged, and I think just based on the way, this is the irony. Here's the irony of ironies. The court that the president liked on this issue is not his friend. And I don't know if anybody has explained to him to that, or kind of my belief is he probably doesn't care. Because again, I gave you the timeline, 4 years, he's going to be gone. And if he's responsible for creating an efficiency in government, he'll take credit for that. And if it's wiped out by the courts, he'll blame the courts. Whatever. That's not his fault. And it evades the issue and the delay, and it gets him a chance to I guess, satisfy a campaign promise. But I think it's a poor strategy for the country. And I think it's also a poor model for the country. It shouldn't be the case that people that are not voted in, and I'm going to be, you know, so I'm the upfront guy. I can tell you who I voted for president. You know who I voted for president? Neither. I think I thought they were both dogs for different reason. I thought they were both, this is my view, I thought they're both
how
destructive.
Dare you?
Yeah. I thought they were both destructive to the country in different ways, completely different ways. And I didn't kind of compare one to the other, but I didn't think voting for either of them advanced the interests of the country, my opinion. And the way that this particular act, I would say, is an example of why I would not, why that bothers me, because that looks like a pure power grab outside. I think it's completely contrary to what was suggested. I think it's a way of evading the Constitution. And part of the issue that arose in both Looper and Jarkissi is it's called the non-delegation doctrine. So if you're in Congress and you have responsibility for, you know, before there's an agency, let's say we're talking about securities, you have an obligation to watch out for securities and conduct hearings. So they created an SEC. And the SEC is now required to take care of securities. But you can't just throw it to the SEC. You have to give them a defined responsibility and call. That's what's being litigated now, by the way, is how specific Congress has given directions to the agencies. And that's what the courts are concerned with. So the argument that, again, the argument that some third party would be able to circumvent that doesn't make any sense to me. It only makes sense to me in the practicality that from a pragmatic standpoint, like I said, obviously they could do it. Not a question. But from the long-term nature, I just think it's just a rush and could be done, and could be done in a way that really would benefit the country, would reduce the amount of litigation, because who wants the litigation? You know, haven't we had enough, you know, argument in this country by now? So now we're going to argue from day one about the constitutionality of something where that could be avoided. And I think that would be good for the country.
So, follow-on question to that. Imagine that the Supreme Court upholds their ability to do this. What kind of loopholes does that open up in the future for, you know, executive branch abuses of power?
They try to be very fact specific in rulings. I mean, that's kind of the way the courts are set up. So if the issue comes up, it's supposed to narrowly define the issue. So if the court is crafty enough, they'd be able to paint this kind of in a box, you know, under this set of facts, you could do it. And the next set of facts, you try to compare it to that. And then the court could say, for one reason or another, it's different. So you don't get the same power. So does it open the door? Yes. But it doesn't make it, you know, black and white that you're forced now every time somebody wants to set up some agency outside the government that now you have to uphold it. It really depends on it. And, you know, also there could be other issues. There may be, you know, claims of national security. I don't know what they're going to claim. Maybe they're going to say it's a national security interest. There might be all kinds of things that would make their case stronger to a court. Because of, you know, emergency situation, et cetera. But I don't know, you know, I don't really know what their end game is. You know, I saw they wanted to cut, but I don't know if it's true. I saw that they wanted to cut maybe $2 trillion in spending. That was the number I saw.
Yeah, that was like something Elon Musk floated out when he was asked, I believe, at a rally. I think that's where the number originated from.
Yeah, and, you know, very well, that might be the number, and they may, again, this may have all been calculated already. We may be like, you know, talking about something that's already in the box and, you know, and done, and they already know. Because maybe this is like, you know, Elon's not going to sit on something, right? So whenever this topic came up with Trump, which is probably, like, at least it was publicly disclosed like a month ago or so, I think about like a month ago. You know, I'm sure from that point in time, they were working full time on crunching whatever they're crunching. But in answer to your question, Hans, the issue is, you know, it's again supposed to be fact, case by case, fact by fact. And we obviously know the court can change its mind too, because we've seen that, right? In last year, that Looper decision is a big change. So that Looper decision, just to explain it, is it's called Chevron deference. It means that up till now, if an agency made a determination about something, the courts would have to give them discretion. So if an agency decided it had to do this, the court would say, okay. And if you sued the agency, you're out of luck. With the Looper case, now the agency's determination does not decide the case. Now the court would make a decision based upon what's the correct interpretation. That's quite a difference. That's the federal government versus the court. Because if the federal government's making a decision, you can kind of imagine that their decision oftentimes will benefit the federal government. And the courts are, you know, just so we know, if it's a federal court, it's an Article 3 of the Constitution. That means those judges are there for lifetime. So notwithstanding whatever political pressures are, they're not, theoretically, they're not influenced by that.
Okay. So just to recap, I want to make sure I fully understand this. Let me ask you this question first. One of the comments you said is like, hey, if they waited a little bit longer, they could bypass a lot of the hurdles they're going to face from a legality perspective to execute against this, because SCOTUS is probably going to rule in a way that upholds what they said before, which is these agencies shouldn't really have this much power to make these kinds of changes. Is that a fair sort of summarization of what you said?
Well, I think they're going to say it's unconstitutional delegation
right.
of power. That yeah. that this is a congressional, this is something Congress should do, not the president.
Yeah, something so Congress should do, not the president.
There's a separation of powers. So there's three branches. So the president is supposed to do, for example, he appoints the leadership of the regulatory bodies. He appoints the cabinet members. He appoints judges. The Congress has advice and consent. So if you appoint a cabinet member, they have a right to up and down. And the courts decide, you know, the legal questions. So here, by trying to, in essence, create a regulatory agency, that's not what the president should be doing. So that, in my opinion, I'm not a constitutional scholar, but that's what I would argue. That violates separation of powers.
So go ahead, Hans, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I guess one of the things that I'm confused about is, like, what is the definition of a regulatory body? Is something, like, in my uninformed legal brain, a regulatory body is something that interfaces between the government and the public. And what we're talking about is not something that interfaces between the government and the public. We're talking about something that's internal to the government.
Well,
addressing the concerns of the government.
I would say you were correct, but Elon says no. Elon says you're wrong, because he says, well, if the public says we don't want that cut, we'll react. So that's the way you've defined it. It is no different. In fact, I'd say it's even more so. He's saying we're going to be more transparent and we're going to react more directly to the reaction. So I would say that's more. That's even a big, I would say that makes it
it's
even more.
It's the greatest regulatory body.
Yeah, I would say that's more. It's super transparent, but I think he kind of like stuck his foot in his mouth there if he wants to claim to the contrary.
And so, how does public sentiment play into this? Like, if one way or the other, if the public says, hey, we absolutely hate this, this is the worst thing that ever happened in the world, which, you know, we'll definitely hear some voices on that side, then what does that mean for all of this story, versus if overwhelmingly, you know, say 70% of Americans decide the Department of Government Efficiency is the greatest thing since sliced bread, you know, we need more of that. Like,
I think they would argue, talk to your congressman so they can execute against it.
Well, again, that's the interesting part, right? So it'll be a year and a half. No matter what, it's going to be a year and a half. So it'll be the next congressional election is 2 years. So I guess we'll get a vote on that right in 2 years. It'll get up or down. But I would say, you know, either way, it's still, because I, you know, kind of answering, if the public's happy with it, then I think the Republicans will get reelected president again in 2028. But that doesn't change how the court might rule. And, you know, I think, you know, even though, because obviously the Democrats think the court sucks, right? Because it's 6-3, 7-2, something like that. But in this case, again, I think it wouldn't be it's not bad if the court is somewhat all over the place and is not political. I think, you know, even if I disagree with some rulings, I'd rather believe that they're making decisions based upon their own analysis and determination. And I don't care what the decision is. They are what they are, as opposed to, you know, being influenced politically and acting that way. I tend to believe the best, by the way, except for maybe like one justice per se, I'm not a big fan of, but everybody else, no matter how they rule, you know, they rule. I believe they're working hard and I believe they're doing their best, and so be it.
So let me drive a hypothetical here. Let me ask my original question. How long would they have to wait in order to execute against this, the quote unquote right way that won't put them in this weird issue? Would they have to wait for Congress to make the agency, to vote on the agency, and to basically, and so is that like a post Trump gets into office that there has to be a bill of some sort has to be brought to Congress, right?
Yeah. I would say kind of the same thing as I assume it's in process now. So there's probably as a backup, because they have to prepare, because I don't think they've made a final determination exactly how they're going to do this. But I'm sure part of it is they're crafting a law, crafting a bill. They're going to create an agency, define what the duties, define the date, and then they'll decide if they're going to introduce it or not. But again, I think their real concern is being tied up in the Senate. And if they get tied up, then that, for example, they've just promised like a July 4th date, right? What happens if they get tied up in the Senate for 6 months? It kind of puts a kibosh on that.
Does it need a supermajority to pass, or does it just need a majority? Like something like that.
If it's filibusterable, then you need 60.
What defines it being filibusterable?
I don't know. In this case, I don't know. I don't know if this would be. I tend to believe it is, by the way. I tend to believe it is because it's like one of the first things that came up about getting rid of the filibuster. So I'm guessing that it is. And obviously they're not going to have 60 votes in the Senate. I think they'll have like 52 or 53,
something like that. Yeah. Okay. So let me walk another hypothetical by you. So what if this sort of non-agency, all they're doing, they're just collecting information and they're collecting, execution like things that the government should execute on this agency if it were to exist in Congress. So they put it all together, they get the public buy-in, right? But they don't do anything until that is actually formed in Congress. And so the work is just like, hey, literally here's the executable, all you have to do is double click and then the government will be way better. Is that will that hold up in court? Where it's like a recommendation.
Yes, you're asking me, if it's just a recommendation, then it's just a recommendation. The question is, though, if you make the recommendation and analysis before you're a lawful body, then is that a lawful analysis?
But would they need Congress to become a lawful body?
If they're going to be treated as some kind of regulatory body, regulatory agency, they need a congressional sign off. They need a congressional bill. They need defined functions, and then they need a head. Somebody has to be a head of the agency.
So I guess
let me stop you one second. And then we get the bigger issues. So the Tesla issues too. So, and we kind of I did this on Herbert's. We talked about it a little bit, but it was not this part. It was the other part. Then it becomes the issue is if you're in that position, and you have contracts like government contracts. Like SpaceX,
conflict of interest.
Like SpaceX, for example, has a huge amount of government contracts, and that's a year and a half. You know, there's going to be lawsuits about that. For example, in defense contracts, it happens. Somebody gets awarded the contract. They say there's bias or something. There's litigation, and what happens is they end up chopping up the. This is often the result. They kind of redo the contract, and Lockheed Martin gets 5% and Palantir, since I like Palantir, Palantir gets 7%, whatever. But they chop it up. So I think the risk here is the same thing. I think if for example, SpaceX gets a new contract and Elon's in there and I'm Rocket Lab or whatever, what's the downside in taking a shot and getting a big piece of a contract? You certainly allege there's some insider, you know, whatever. You may lose. I mean, you very well may lose, but you at least have an argument. There's an argument to be made. And I think, and I think he's going to be, I think this is not just like a casual view of things. This is a deep dive. If it affects $2 trillion in the budget every year, I think that's a tough
one
to say. Yeah. So I think it's tough to say that he did not have material involvement in the government. So I think, and I think the reason why they're saying, and I think they framed it as a non-government agency or outside the government, I think that's kind of for the protection of Elon. I think they don't want to
make it more difficult for him to deal with government contracts, deal with the conflict. Yeah.
So this, where was this? Where did I read this? To drive this kind of drastic change, the Department of Government Efficiency will provide advice and guidance from outside of government and will partner with the White House and Office of Management and Budget to drive large-scale structural reform and create an entrepreneurial approach to government never seen before. So, like, when I read this, I think the framing they're trying to set up, and this is, like, one of my other questions, too, is, like, more of a consultancy to the government more than an actual execution of the tasks of the government. So it's like, for example, it's like as if the government went out and hired PwC or Deloitte or any of these other, like, you know, go through the different consultancy groups or whatever. It's like that they're
I agree, but you have to remember that whenever this first conversation took place and then Elon said okay, he called his lawyers and said, how should we, if we're going to sell it, how should we sell it? And anything that's coming out today is a sale. That's why it's framed as is.
For sure. For sure. Even,
by the way, I saw the president reference what they were going to do, and he referenced it in a different way. So, and I was going to open it up on my computer, but I couldn't, obviously I couldn't do that because of situation
beyond
my
control. That's why you look the way that you look.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. But he referenced it suggesting they had power. So it wasn't, and he didn't use the advisory role because he speaks differently and he might've meant it differently. But again, you know, this is all, if this ends up in litigation, all the stuff we're talking about is going to end up being talked about. The language, just the language and how it was set up beforehand. But again, I think the way it's being framed is because the lawyers think that if we frame it as away from the government, we have a better chance of being able to do it now and have an argument. Yeah. And again, I want to make this clear. They could do it. They could do it right now. And I think they will do it. So whatever I'm saying, whatever the ramifications, whatever the speculation I'm offering, I think they're going to do whatever they said they're going to do.
You're saying that a bunch of lawyers are about to make a lot of money is basically what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
Better time to be a lawyer.
Yes. Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the lead into my question perfectly, actually. You know, in just if you step back to a 1,000-foot view, in the legal profession, where would you place your money bets on a small group of smart lawyers or on literally the largest, most highly paid army of lawyers in the entire world, which is the entire DC establishment?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it depends on how it works out, because it may not just be on Elon and his lawyers. There may be like a whole bunch of groups that join in. There may be like, you know, what you were asking about, the public support. There may be a lot of support for it. Because in essence, if you can cut the deficit substantially and, you know, continually and make the government more efficient, then you might get a lot of support. Now, the flip side of that, and this is kind of like the robot argument. What do you do with all these employees now?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, there's going to be, you know, if they get rid of, if it's 2 trillion, I can't do the math, but if each government employee is making 100 grand a year, I think that
it's not the 2 trillion is like, I did actually do some math with my friend today because we were having an argument over this as well.
Okay.
If you do, I think there's 3 million federal employees. If you cut half of them to 1.5 million and you assume the average all in wage with healthcare and everything is 70 grand a year, which is probably low, honestly. It's probably more.
Yeah.
It's something like $100 billion a year saved. So, So it's not like, so I think the 2 trillion is like the downstream effects of allowing government to run efficiently. Because then you allow, you
know, it's more about the money that those bureaucrats are spending than it is about what they're
exactly.
Earning.
So in other words, it's higher math, not the direct. Sure.
not the direct expenses, more the indirect.
Level two yeah. math, exactly. So, indirect
but
expenses.
But let's use your numbers. Let's say it's $1.5 million. Let's say you cut half. That's $1.5 million people.
Yeah, for sure.
And again, you know, and so that's $1.5 million. And again, this is political.
But you give them severance. Right? You give them like a 2-year severance and let the market absorb them over time. You know?
But if they're government employees, 2-year severance making, you know, let's say it's a difference. If 2-year severance at Google is different.
I mean, it's literally no different than what they're doing now. They're getting paid to do nothing.
I know. But at least they have if you're in the government, you think you have a job forever, right? You think you're basically there for the duration.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah, that is definitely is part of the problem. But now you're not. And, you know, and I don't know, like, the labor contracts. That's the other part. There probably are labor contracts, and there's special protections for government employees because of, based on service and how much notice they have to get to be terminated. So I think it's a pretty complicated thing. But I think the termination of employees is also another issue that's going to have to be dealt with. And it has to be a political issue, too, because those 1.5 million people, some of them might vote. Some of those might have family that might vote and whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I think that so the reason why I'm, like, my opinion, why I'm so excited about this happening, like, personally, is that we'll actually have insight. If they actually can start bringing these things forward, have insight into all the complexities and the mess of what the government actually has to live through on a day-to-day basis. I think that's why, like, at the very least, there will be some level of transparency into all these hurdles that we haven't, like this conversation alone. What has been so eye-opening for me is, like, there's a reason why no one else has done this. It's because it's a legal minefield. It's a legal minefield. And so and so because of that, it has creeped to be ever bigger and ever more efficient and ever more complex and so on and so forth, right? And I think that in itself just highlights why there's so much excitement behind this, is that, hey, at least we'll know what the frick is happening, at the very least. You know,
but I agree, by the way, and I who wouldn't want, like, $2 trillion?
You're gonna be making so much money in the next 4 years, Richard. Jeez, my goodness, your buddies are gonna be buying yachts left and right.
I mean, the president's waiting in my conference room. I told him I was busy live stream, whatever.
Which one, Biden or Trump?
The Biden doesn't know where he is at this the current time. So he wouldn't know you'd be in the conference room.
That's why he's in your conference room.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe that's true. No, but my point would be, yes, that's all true, but why not do it in a way that takes away a lot of the legal challenge? Not that it's going to be challenged. It's going to be challenged anyway, I guarantee it. But why not, like, cut the legs out of...
Maybe that's the thought process. It's going to get challenged anyway.
I agree, but why not cut the legs out of the prime argument? Like, you know, why give somebody an argument that is, it's not like, you know, because it was mentioned, right? Looper, those cases are mentioned. So they've obviously thought about the Supreme Court. I think they've maybe thought about it in too aggressive a manner and not really what the court is saying. They're thinking the court's going to be supportive because it's 7-2. I don't think so. I think this is an issue where they wouldn't be supportive. I think they, and this might be one of those 9-0 votes. This might be the whole court. And I think they could circumvent that response by just setting up an agency and do it again. You could do all the work beforehand. Don't publish it. Day one, you were really productive. Here's our list. And then you go for it. And then there's no argument about an improper agency, that the president stepped beyond his bounds. There's a violation of separation of powers. There's a non-delegation problem. You avoid all that. You may still get arguments, but the arguments won't be factually at that point. So uh-huh. I agree. I'm for it. I'm just for it in a more
legal way.
Yeah. I know why. Yeah, well, I agree. It is slow. And again, Elon, this is not his preferred, the slow way is not his preferred method. He's willing to take the risk. And, you know, whatever happens, happens. And listen, if you're worth like, you know, $600 billion, you can afford a lot of lawyers.
and you probably could figure a way out of a lot of situations. So your worry at night is probably not as much as you.
And I think that is, I think, the underpinning of a lot of people that do not like what's happening. And I think that is like a fair argument, because they're like, how can I trust somebody that's going to be able to do that? Where he's going to be able to base essentially shield himself from any potential repercussions from potentially violating the constitutional law while fighting for the Constitution. And I think that underpins a lot of the concern. And I completely understand it. Yeah.
Listen, that I'm okay with. You know, somebody acting in a government capacity, they're given protection because there's always going to be 40 or 50% of the people that don't agree. So I don't mind that part. I really don't mind. I just want it done in a proper frame. And I really think it would be a big plus for the Republican Party. They could assert, we did it according to Hoyle. We followed the rules completely. We made sure there was no argument that could be made so that what we were doing would survive. Because again, what happens 4 years from now and we have to repopulate the government? Or, you know, because in like wrongful termination cases, people get the opportunity to get their job back, right? That's kind of one of the options. So what happens if we get rid of a million and a half people and then we have to give them the opportunity to get back into the workforce, or we have to pay them another 5 years of salary? Those are not insignificant things. And again, you know, we're a pretty now society. You know, we have very little ability to wait. I think this is just another example of that.
Yeah.
Even if it's a good thing.
Those are great points. Let me bring up a couple of super chats we've received here through the live stream. From Jesse Bear 2115, $10 super chat. Thanks so much. All executive power stems from the president and is delegated to subordinates of the executive branch. Trump could delegate his power to restructure the executive agencies through executive order. Do you think that is a fair assessment of this?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, everything, like when you try to circumvent Congress being responsible for the agencies, that's a violation. Again, I'm not the court. So just some guy in L.A. opining.
With a Cardinals jersey on.
With a Cardinals, yeah. Even though I had a very good last week, by the way, just to let you know, with the Dodgers.
Congratulations.
Yeah. You can, listen, it's not a matter of doing anything. You can do whatever you want. It's a country. This country. You could do whatever you want, but it still be, in my opinion, is a violation of separation of powers. So it's unconstitutional.
Yeah. From Pete, $5 super chat. If Doge offer voluntary redundancy with 2-year pay, they will be oversubscribed with Fed worker volunteers. I'm not 100% sure what he means by that. But then he has a follow up. Any legal issues if it's voluntary redundancy? I'm guessing just people leaving on their own merit.
I think he means resignation, voluntary resignations.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
People can leave.
Yeah. No one's being forced to stay, you know,
but I don't know if you were an employee and you thought you're going to get canned, kind of what you said, Farzad, if you're an employee and you think you're going to get canned, cause you're like, you've been sitting in the corner for 3 years doing nothing, you still think you're going to get some kind of severance. So do you want to split prematurely? Maybe you reach out and negotiate, but probably, you know, most government employees, if they're useless, they're probably useless. So they're not going to even reach out. They're just going to sit in the corner.
So just wait. Yeah.
So here, let's get you to red team this for a second, Richard. Like if you were advising the Department of Government Efficiency on how to avoid those pitfalls that you talk about in the future, can you use the severance offer specifically to basically gain a position of leverage over the people that are being exited from the federal government in these types of legal
procedures? Yeah, you could. You certainly could have agreements with everybody who exits. And in the agreements, you could have part of the agreement would be you waive all claims, because it's commonplace in an agreement. We're going to pay you X dollars. You agree to waive all claims. You're done. Bye. End. That's done. So for that person, they can do nothing. If the court said everybody was ordered back, they're not included in that discussion. So, yeah.
So if you willingly sign away your right to fight the thing that happened, even if somebody brings over a class action lawsuit, you're not included in that by default because you signed away your right to be part of that class action. Correct. Okay.
If you waive the right, and again, you know, the only issue would be if somebody might argue they were coerced, maybe they thought the argument might be, yeah, I thought I was going to lose my job because I'm, you know, I'm 40-year employee and I'm probably overpaid and I would be the one to go. So I signed under duress. That would be an argument. Would they lose probably on that argument? Probably. But that would be an argument they might make.
I see. One more
question before we move on there. So if, based on your knowledge of lawyers and the legal profession and the types of people that are involved here, would you also expect some enterprising groups to go and proactively pay a bunch of federal employees not to sign and take their severance so that they have a financial ability to get fired to create a case in the future that has better standing?
Yeah, all you need is one, right? We saw it with Elon's case in Delaware, right? You need some guy with 3 shares, and he's the guy, right? So yeah, all you need is and there's going to be plenty of plaintiffs' lawyers that are going to be looking for clients. There's plenty of plaintiffs' class action firms. And listen, I'm okay if it's for a proper purpose. Like, you know, there are cases where class action lawyers have taking care of situations where the water's polluted and it's killing everybody in the town. Hey, I happen to think that's a good use of class action. But in like these situations, there's a lot of law firms who are looking for anybody because as we can see, as an example, Elon in Delaware, there could be a nice pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for the law firm.
In the billions.
Yeah, in the many the billions.
Yeah,
I think that's what they thought.
I actually want to get your sort of updated thoughts on that because I know that's coming down the pike soon. Let me. So, do you know any constitutional lawyers personally? Like, are you friends with any of them? Are you familiar with any of them?
Because
my question was like, is there? That could we create like maybe some if somebody listens to this and you're a constitutional lawyer, I would love to host a discussion pro and against people that are familiar with the law very, very, very closely. Not I'm not saying that you aren't, Richard, because you know everything about obviously.
I would not hold myself out as such.
Yeah. But so, I'm wondering if we can have like a live discussion on that. And I'm sure you know what? I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of like different YouTube channels out there that are run by lawyers that might do that. I would love to hear that because I mean from this discussion it sounds like it's going to be chaos. The next 4 years are going to be chaos when it comes to this because they're going to try to push it through. Obviously they're going to try to push it through any way they can, and every law firm that could profit off of this is probably licking their chops. They're like, oh yeah, go for it because let's see what happens here. It's going to be chaotic as hell.
Yeah, well, it's novel, right? It's never been a situation, so nobody could say yay or nay. It's absolutely going to be yay or nay, so anybody can go for it, and they can't be accused of acting in bad faith, right? You know, a lot of times there are cases lawyers are really shouldn't be involved because they really know there's not a case. Well, here there's no argument. You could. Who knows how it's going to turn out. So, yeah, I think absolutely 100% you will see a huge amount of legal action. And again, you know, not that my way would avoid all the legal action, but I think it would have a better chance of withstanding ultimately any kind of Supreme Court challenge.
Yeah. I think the most interesting thing about this whole thing is like this startup culture type of solution of trying to figure out solutions that happens so often in the business world that people are really blind to. Like unless you've been part of a startup culture or a fast growing company, you don't really know the kind of decisions and things that happen on a daily basis that feel kind of like rushed and crazy. But in reality, like those are the reasons why those businesses end up being massively successful because you're able to make these drastic, insane changes suddenly almost seemingly like outside of the purview of what you're supposed to be doing, right? It's like, and now that's being applied to literally the most opposite style of thing that could ever exist, that is completely incapable and incompatible with that type of execution style. And like, that is, to me, is so endlessly fascinating. It's like literally worlds collide. I saw somebody post somebody on X, they posted, we're finally going to figure out what happens when the unstoppable force meets the unmovable object. And it's so true. It's so true. And like, what is that going to give birth to? So much content.
Yeah. One thing is, though, you have to remember again, and this is important, whatever somebody calls something is meaningless, because the court ultimately is going to look to see what was really going on.
Yeah.
You know, if I call a brownie ice cream, it doesn't make it ice cream.
Right. Right.
And I like brownie. I like brownies, by the way.
So you mean the Inflation Reduction Act might not actually reduce inflation?
All right. Here we go at $3 super chat. Go slow. Democrat majority to deal with. So I think the thought process here is like, hey, if, you know, 2020, when is the next vote? 26?
26. 26.
Yeah. So if some Republican chairs get overturned in Congress, could they run into a situation where they're not even able to get this thing spun up because now you overturn some seats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could.
So time of
It also depends on how much authority you give. Again, the more specific you are about what they should do, kind of the more they can do. So if you give them like really specific, and by the way, I think by now they should know exactly what they're going to do. So I think they'd be able to lay this out pretty specifically. But anyway, that's
for whatever. Fascinating. So crazy. Wow. Go ahead, Hans.
So let me push you a little bit on the thought that the Supreme Court would side against the administration on this one. My smell test on the current Supreme Court is that they're a little bit more originalist than we've had in a long time, and that the spirit of the Constitution matters to them to a pretty high degree. And if this Department of Government Efficiency is enacted in such a way that the public has a big voice in identifying issues and supporting things, like, procedural issues aside, what you have there is a revitalization of a government of the people, by the people, for the people, that is held accountable to the people. And I guess I'm curious why you're so confident, like, that the procedural issues of how that is brought about will be more important to the Supreme Court than the spirit of the Constitution, like the original Constitution, being upheld more.
Yeah, I think because I appreciate that question. I think it's a good question, by the way. And I like, by the way, when people ask questions and everybody always says it's a good question, I don't think all questions are good. That one, I think, was a good question. I think because if you're an original constitutional, you know, you don't believe in like in a more of an interpretive fashion, this is the basic elements of our Constitution. The three branches of government, separation of powers. So I think if you really are an originalist, as you framed it, this is kind of a part of your base. This is kind of where everything flows. And I think you'd go back and say you violate, it's a violation of separation of powers. That's why I think, you know, that's why I believe I would circumvent that. That's why if I were advising, even though I don't know what to advise, I would advise to go around that if you can. Again, I don't know how long it might take. I don't know how long the Democrats could block in the Senate. I don't think 6 months. Do I think? I don't really think 6 months. And again, you know, that's where the public support would be helpful, right? It would probably be that period of time where the public would be speaking out. We want that. We want less government employees. We want to save money. We want the economy better situation. That would probably encourage the confirmation process, the establishment of the agency process, to speed up.
But that's why I think that. Again, I'm not sure because I don't know. I don't even know if the court will be the same in 4 years. We don't even know that. It's very pot. There's three justices that are over 70, two conservative, one liberal. I know that the Democrats, a lot of Democrats wanted the liberal justice to retire, you know, like 6 months ago, but she did not. And I don't know about the two conservative justices, but the justices, you know, they can stay till they're 90 years old. And some of those guys are even competent.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see how this develops in the next couple months, because I think it's going to be what I've been sort of like really observing is that, and I don't know if this has been the same with other elections, like election cycles and like post election and everything, because you know this is the one that I've been paying the closest attention to by far. It seems like the Trump admin wants to move really fast on stuff. They're making appointments very quickly. They're making them very publicly. I think they're aided by the fact that the guy that owns one of the biggest platforms in the world and the largest news platform in the world is so good at being a megaphone for things that he believes in, which is creating a lot of public awareness, which to me, like to your point of like, hey, like if you can get the public to sort of jump on this and sort of drive it forward and call for this, I think that's one of the secret weapons they have. Well, not so secret, but like one of the weapons they have in Elon Musk is that they can actually do this, versus I think other administrations would have not been able to get the type of public buy-in to push this kind of stuff through, regardless of how they do it.
I think, you know, to me, I think the biggest event that happened, and I bet this, so I wasn't like I had a favorite in the election. I had my pick. I think because Trump won the vote. It wasn't a question. It's so, you know, and you know,
the popular vote,
like,
you mean?
We changed terms. So people use like landslide mandate. You know, I remember Nixon versus McGovern. Look that up, by the way. Look at the popular vote, Nixon versus McGovern. They called that a landslide. Just like terms, I think, are people use terms improperly. But I think he definitely erased any doubt.
60% of the popular vote.
Yeah, yeah.
520 electoral votes.
Yeah, that's a pretty, I think that's a landslide. imagine how embarrassing that would be. You don't even win your home state.
Dang. Think about that.
You lose your home state. That's embarrassing. That's when you
South get, Dakota? Yeah. Wow. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's a landslide. But the fact that he won the popular vote, I think gave him, it took away the, I believe, and I'm in California. So you can imagine how things are here. There's a lot of people unhappy, but I think because he won the popular vote, it kind of cut the legs out from that. Nobody could really say, nobody can contest the election. It's not a contestable election. So that means I think he can move much faster on all things. Look at how long did it take the stock market to move in particular stocks? Listen, Bitcoin and Tesla, that was one and the same. Those just rocketed. I mean,
The entire stock market,
but there were certain areas that did more than other areas.
Specific moves, for sure.
And like, and solar, I guess the solar business of Tesla is not the best part of the company. But if you look, if you saw like some of those solar stocks, they got decimated.
Yeah.
They were claimed.
Yeah. Fascinating development. Will you come back to help us wait through this as stuff develops?
Oh, of course.
We still won't pay you, but will you still come back?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that. I would buy. I know one thing. I'd buy. I haven't bought it yet, and this is not financial advice. But I would think that Dogecoin would do very well. I know it's done very well in the past like week, but I would think
I've already seen people accusing Elon of conflict of interest just over that one fact alone. He's pumping Doge.
November 5th, it was at 16 cents. It's now at 40 cents even.
Yeah. And they said it's headed to 70 cents. And then who knows?
But yeah, listen, it's a great marketing idea. I think it's a great marketing tool.
I kid you not. My dad literally texted the family chat today and he said, buy Dogecoin. My father. Okay.
That means we're about that. You know, when everybody's telling you
we're at the peak,
that means the crash is next week. That's the crash. By the way, you're going to ask me quickly about
Delaware. Where do you think? Yeah, Delaware. So this is the Tesla case where the Delaware judge rescinded the pay package, but then it got voted through. Yeah. All that good stuff. Yeah.
I think she suggested she'd have a ruling by the end of the year.
Yes. What does your crystal ball say?
I think she's going to rule against Elon.
Okay.
I think she's going to confirm her ruling. She's not going to deal with everything that came in after the fact.
Okay. So what does that mean from a practicality perspective?
There'll be an appeal.
Yeah. So she's just going to keep dragging out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And again, you know, I think that any shortcoming for Elon can be, I said this originally, any shortcoming can be made up in Texas. He could have any kind of pay package to the extent that it doesn't work out in Delaware. He could construct any pay package at this point in time in Texas and it's going to be upheld. So if they want to make up for it. But I've thought, you know, because the way she's conducted herself to this point in time, if you were going to put odds, it would be, I think it would be a surprise if she changed her tune. And her tune to this point in time has not been particularly friendly to Elon.
Yeah.
So I think the way she can smooth it, I mean, this is the way I thought. I think she can say everything that the trial was about the trial, everything that happened afterwards, I didn't consider. And maybe that changes things, but it wasn't before me. So I'm not going to consider it. I'm going to find as was suggested, but I'm only going to give some amount, small amount of legal fees as to plaintiff's attorneys. I'm going to give small amount, might be, you know, $50 million or something like that, but peanuts relative to what they were asking, which would be kind of, in her mind, some way of splitting the baby in an aspect, because she's not giving them the billions in fees. And I just think it would be too hard for her to change the way she's handled the case. And again, that doesn't mean the appellate court or this, I think one of these courts probably would overturn it. But I think you'd have to take it up. And again, I think at the time that it's ultimately decided, it may be meaningless by that time anyway, because he would have been compensated or, you know, Tesla 10x'd and that money's insignificant now, really, in the grand scheme. Yeah. He's worth $1.8 trillion at that point. Maybe it doesn't make a difference at that point in time. I don't know.
I think the fact that the shareholders vote reaffirmed the original pay package, it removes any all risk. And I think literally the only thing that investors now have to worry about is the legal fee that they're technically paying for.
Yeah, because Again, ultimately anything can be corrected after the fact, honestly. Yeah. The legal fees, but I think it's not going to be due, even if it ended up being some ridiculous number, I would feel very confident saying that will not withstand appeal. If she gave him like $1 billion, that's not going to fly.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention quickly was there was a defamation action. Elon filed a defamation action against CBS. I think CBS.
Oh, really?
Based upon statements they made. I think maybe just to shut them up. And since I had a defamation case brought against me, I am an expert in defamation.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I've completed the cycle, by the way. I got sued because of my content, because I made certain allegations about... I didn't even make these allegations, but they claimed I made certain allegations. So they sued me in federal court. And today, I think the last plaintiff dismissed me. So the case is now over. But This is wonderful. It was great. Yeah. But this is from doing a YouTube vid. This is doing a YouTube live stream. So be careful.
Wow. Okay. So don't say anything bad about anybody.
Well, yes, that's correct.
That sounds like an infringement of freedom of speech.
Yeah, you know what? That's what I claimed, and the federal judge didn't seem to be really that moved by that.
Really?
Yeah. It was early in the case. He hadn't ruled yet, and then the case kind of ended up. It was a crappy case anyway. Defamation is really hard to prove, because if it's a public figure, you have to prove not only that the whatever was said was false, but it was done knowing that it was false. Mm-hmm. So I knew that the car didn't blow up, and I claimed the car blew up. Everything right. else is kind of gray area, and it's really hard to win. Usually it's done to shut people up, and you know, Elon probably was unhappy with maybe the content of whatever CBS was saying. So you threaten a lawsuit or you pursue a lawsuit. For him, it's peanuts. And it might be worth substantially more to just shut them up. That's what they tried to do to me. That was literally the purpose, because there was litigation ongoing and I was commenting on the litigation. So, and it did impact me, honestly. It did cause me for a while to change my words, even though when I'm like doing a live stream and I'm talking
about,
you had
to say opinion a lot more often.
No, that doesn't save you either, by the way. Just saying opinion doesn't make it opinion. So if you have an opinion, let's say I have an opinion that you ran the stoplight because you crossed the limit line, that's based on fact. So even though I say it's opinion, if it turned out I really didn't see you cross the limit line and, you know, whatever, that's actual defamation because it's untrue and you would be accusing me of being careless or whatever. So people often do that. They say, you know, every YouTube video, this is opinion only. It's only opinion if it's opinion. And opinion really, if it can be proven yes or no, then it's probably not opinion.
Okay.
So if I say like Farzad is a bank robber, that's provable yes or no.
I'm suing you.
If I say he's a good bank robber, that might be an opinion.
Ah. So it's like if you're adding the subjective sort of like layer on top of it.
maybe.
So don't put any sort of like qualifier on your statements, basically.
I do. Yeah. Actually, I do the opposite now. I did this before. I said, don't believe anything I say. Don't take anything I say as accurate. This is just entertainment nonsense and go for it.
But it's so weird that you even have to say that. Like, it's like, that's just like, why are they kneecapping people talking? That's crazy.
And, you know, because I'm a lawyer, I handled the case for myself because I knew I could do it. I couldn't do it all the way because if we go into trial, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
I knew I could do it, but think about if it was you, for example.
And you got
sued for defamation. No, I'm saying like from a practical standpoint, you'd have to spend a shitload of money on legal fees and whatever. And it 100%. would impact your speech.
Sure.
You'd think about it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah. It would definitely be like a cloud in some respects, potentially. Yeah.
I don't know if you've already been sued for defamation.
No.
But if you had been and you had to write that first check to your lawyer, I guarantee you that would impact your word choice.
What do you think about lawyers paying for legal fees? Like the losing lawyer pays, or like the losing plaintiff pays for the legal fees of the winning lawyer?
I am 100% for that, but that's an unpopular view for plaintiff's attorneys. So if you're a plaintiff's attorney, is the attorney who's bringing the claim, and a lot of times, especially as used, it's for, you know, personal injuries, it's for large awards, and they get a percentage of that. So it would impact plaintiff's lawyers, and they would be really opposed to, because it would suggest to you, if you didn't have a slam dunk case, I'm not going to pursue it. So every like BS car accident where some guy gets hit, he goes to the doctor, he gets
therapy on his neck, $3,000 in medical fees, and $3,000 in his pocket. Those cases probably go away. A lot of cases go away. So the question is, do some really appropriate cases go away just because there's not enough lawyers who are willing to take the risk? But I'm pro that because I think there's enough waste in the legal system, and it's most of it is non-productive. You know, yeah. if you're doing a contract, you're putting a merger together, something like that, okay, that's creating something. If you're just arguing about something and you're spending money, it's not creating anything other than it's getting some lawyer a nice new car. That's really not productive.
And, but doesn't it make sense, though, like creating an incentive for lawyers to only bring cases forward that have a chance of winning, like a significant chance of winning? Well, wouldn't that automatically filter out like towards those cases?
I don't think that's how they would look at it. They would look at more, they would avoid cases they thought they had a chance of losing. And okay. That's different. That's the different end of the spectrum. Not that they'd be looking for the best cases. They'd be looking to avoid cases that might be maybe 50, lower
50, in 60, 40.
Or lower in value. So maybe there's smaller cases now and nobody can get legal representation in smaller cases.
I see.
And maybe that would impact like people with less
means. But if they have a good chance of winning, then just take them on.
But if I'm a lawyer and it's $3,000 and I have a risk of losing, why am I going to even take a risk? It's not worth the upside.
Okay.
Because now there's no risk, and it's still hard to get a lawyer to take small cases. Okay. If you add the risk, I would think if there was a risk, and if I was doing, I don't do like car accidents and that kind of stuff. But if there was a risk, I would think about it. And if you think about it, that means it's going to be incorporated somehow that you're going to take less cases.
But again,
I agree with you. So I think that the losing party should be liable for the legal fees.
Yeah.
Whether it be plaintiff or defendant. And so everybody should consider it. And what would happen also is that you'd get a much higher and earlier percentage of cases settling. So yeah. Even if somebody brought a case, they would want to, just like in stocks, right? Your stock runs up, you want to take off some risk off the table, so you sell the stock. Same thing, you might take less to take the risk off the table.
Yeah, I just think if society even knew that, then I think less people would be willing to, I don't know. I just feel like it's a proper forcing function. But anyway, I mean, we could really go down a rabbit hole here and like sort of talk through all the different variations of this. So, okay.
Yes.
Very good. So Hans, did you want to do anything else before we let Richard get back to his very busy day?
The only thing that flew through my mind at one point was shout out the Honorable Judge Kathleen McCormick for forcing Elon to purchase X, because boy, was that a big turning point in the timeline. So
do you think, by the way, that X is going to buy DJT?
I don't think so.
That
I don't know, who knows?
Extremely wasteful.
Yeah. I think it's a higher likelihood chance X buy CNN.
Yeah,
I saw that too. I've seen both. I've seen both. I've heard that they're thinking about buying the Not Legal Advice channel.
Wow, they should totally do that. Yeah, I hear it's worth a lot. It's at least $1 billion, and the host there is so good. Is so he's good a, at Not Legal Advice on YouTube.
And he's a big Cardinal fan, obviously.
Yes, and a Dodgers fan.
And a Dodgers.
Yeah. Where can people find you? So Not Legal Advice on YouTube and at Raw 999.
Correct.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Richard. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I'm sure we'll be back here soon as this story unfolds. Bye, everybody.